Podcast is a proud member of the That Moment In Podcast Network. Check out the network at thatmomentin.com.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Cinema Recall Podcast. This is the podcast found at thatmomentin.com. I'm your host, The Vern, and today we are going to be talking about a few scenes from Sidney Lumet's 1975 bank robber drama Dog Day Afternoon, starring Al Pacino and John Cazale. And joining me for this episode, I have with us a man, a gentleman, a guy who's been on many different podcasts. You may have heard him on the original remake podcast, Podstalgic, We Got Five. He's also been on episodes of TV Ate My Brain, talking about The Walking Dead, Back to the Future, the animated series. He's a big part of the Core Tip Arts Network podcast. I have with us right now, Peter. Hello, sir.
Hello, Laverne. Thank you for having me. And boy, it sounds like you really did your research. I'm very impressed. This is one of the few instances I like to do a little pat on the back, but I am a two-time feature on the Grazing the Podcasters.
Yes. Yes, you have. Yes, very much. That's for the film Pasture, right. Which is the other podcast that hosts right there. I love listening to your podcast. I don't get a chance to hear as often as I like to. In fact, the one episode from original remake that I am excited to hear is your views on both the Clint Eastwood McDowell movie and the Sofia Coppola Bagdad movies.
That one I'm actually not on, but it
you're
was
not
still,
oh
yeah, that's the thing with that particular episode. My co-host Michael Denniston and I I'd hate to say it, but often we don't get to get a chance to really have our schedules line up, and so you'll find that I'll have a guest and then he'll have a guest, and whenever we can, we'll do an episode together. So the next recording, at the time of this particular recording, our next collaboration will be the It movies.
Ooh.
Yeah. So I am one of the very few that did not grow up on the original It movie. I did see it recently for the purpose of the review. So I don't have the nostalgic feelings or anything like that. So it's going to be a very interesting comparison for sure.
Well, definitely when you're comparing the two Pennywise characters, yeah, too, it's going to be very much different there. I don't know who the cat is who's playing Pennywise in the new movie there, but I'm sure it'll be an interesting comparison. I'm sure it's not going to be as silly as Tim Curry was in the 90s version there, but
I hope not.
Oh, well, very cool. Well, let me tell you something, man. How did you get started with, all these different table podcast shows? I mean, you do, a lot of work on these things right here. You guys, four different shows you host or guest spots on there.
Yeah.
How did you start this out, man?
Well, when I first started podcasting, it's Podstalgic was originally titled Hydrate Level 4, and the concept of that show was reviewing movies that I grew up with my 13-year-old son, who is now 17. And as he got older, he became less available. And at some point, I just started inviting different guests on the show to review movies that we grew up watching to kind of see if it still holds up from our perspective. So at some point, I kind of just retitled it Podstalgic, keeping basically the same concept, just kind of revamping, hoping to get new listeners and stuff. But I also felt Hydrate Level 4 was a bit of a head-scratcher. And for those that don't know, it's a very obscure line dropped in Back to the Future 2, which entire franchise, it's my Star Wars, is what I tell people. And Michael Denniston is just actually the first guy that ever invited me on to a show. And so from then on, we formed this relationship. And at some point, he was like, hey, I would like to work with you. And it was after a recording, and he noticed a poster behind me, and he asked what it was. And it's the Hong Kong flick called Infernal Affairs, which would later be adapted into The Departed. Won the best movie of 2008?
I think it won best director, actually. Yeah, but I think it also won best picture as well, too. But yeah, I know it won best director for Scorsese.
Right. Yeah, so, and I told him, you know, I'm kind of a, I like watching remakes and the original movies. Like, if something came out and I heard it was a remake, I would try to seek out the original just to watch it. And it was something kind of fun that I did, and he kind of liked the idea of that. And when we were kicking around the idea for the title of the podcast, I go, well, we should probably incorporate like the words original and remake in there somewhere. And that's how we came up with the title, Original Remake. I'm also a huge fan of Quantum Leap, and I became friends with the host of the Quantum Leap podcast, Albie. And then we found another common passion, which is Back to the Future. And at the time, you know, Back to the Future was coming up on that very special date, October 21st, 2015, which most people know it as Future Day. And along with that, they were going to re-release the animated series on DVD. Albie and I, we decided, hey, you know, there's probably not going to be a whole lot of people reviewing those episodes. And so we decided that we would start a podcast and do that. We are extremely behind. I think we are at the ninth episode of season one. And there's two seasons, but it's been nearly a year since we recorded the last one. So we're not gone. We just, you know, obviously I have a lot of other podcasts, and he himself is, you know, running a network. And my fourth show, We Got Five, which was also featured over there, that one actually kind of started not really as a joke, but Carly, who you know, who runs Core 10 Parts, she was on a Family Feud episode along with network mate Chris of Let's Chat with Rebel and Friends. But one day, Devin, who's my co-host now on We Got Five, him and Carly were on my show, which was then Hydrate Level 4, doing top five sports movies. And we had such a good time, and Carly said that Devin and I worked so great together that we should do a show just like that. And at that time, Carly, you know, had a very small network with her two shows, and I kind of just jokingly said, yeah, we'll put it on your network too. And she's like, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. And I was just like, oh okay, she's serious about this. And 2 weeks later, We Got Five was born. And and there we are, all four shows. You mentioned it. I cover Walking Dead on TV Ate My Brain, which is another show on Core 10 Parts.
That's very cool there. And I will definitely, like I said before, I've heard episodes of Original Remake and We Got Five. I haven't heard too much, and of course, Bostalgic there. I haven't heard too much of the Back to the Future animated shows just because I don't really watch that shows that much right there. I know, like, when you buy the DVD box set of Back to the Future, it includes them on there.
Yeah.
So I am kind of curious to check those out. The episode where we did, like, a Family Feud, that was from my older podcast, the As You Watch podcast, which is no longer making new episodes. But if you do want to hear that Family Feud episode, please go on to asyouwatch.wordpress.com and you can hear that episode there. But anyways, let's take a small break right now, if you don't mind, Peter. We're going to play some quick ads from some other shows, and then we'll be back to talk about a few scenes from Dog Day Afternoon.
We'll return after these messages.
Introducing Core 10 Parts, a new podcast network for the pop culture fan in you. From in-depth TV analysis and humorous life rankings to provocative and witty discussions, Core 10 Parts is bringing you the engaging topics you can't miss.
That Pop This Life is where we talk about pop culture, life, and the ridiculousness of it all.
Talking Shondaland, covering the latest of Shonda Rhimes' TV shows.
On We Got Five, we list our top five favorites with a new topic every week.
So, join the conversation, CoreTenParts.com.
This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
On the Simplistic Reviews podcast, we talk movies. We talk TV. We talk...
Hello, Julie, what the heck are you doing?
Trying to make our spot sound more exciting by adding explosions.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you could have got the point across with sound effects, not the real thing.
Download the show on iTunes or at simplisticreviews.blogspot.com.
I'm sure your insurance company will cover that.
No, they won't.
No, they probably won't.
And we are back, everyone. Welcome back to the Cinema Recall Podcast here at ThatMomentIn.com. Now, last episode, folks, I posted a poll about five heist movies that you would like to hear discussed on the show. And again, those choices were Inside Man, The Town, Dog Day Afternoon, The Killing, and Point Break. And the one that won with the majority of the votes was Dog Day Afternoon. And Peter, I have to ask you this, sir. Have you seen this movie before?
This was the first time I've seen the movie. I am very familiar of it. I've seen it, you know, at the Blockbuster back in my time when I used to work there. So it was a movie that I've always wanted to check out because it was a young Al Pacino along with, the title escapes me, but it starts with an S. Sounds like Serpent, kind of.
Serpico.
That one, yeah. So these were the two movies that I've always wanted to check out. And so I thought this was a perfect opportunity for me to watch Dog Day Afternoon because I think it's been referenced in other movies as well. And again, you know, it's just young Al Pacino. I love the Godfather movies. And so I was excited to watch this for the very first time.
So just general thoughts, what did you think of it?
I thought it was very good, actually. I thought for the movie just being a little over 2 hours, I thought it was well-paced. I enjoyed the movie as a whole, and quite frankly, a little sad that I won't be able to review the movie as a whole. This is still going to be fun nonetheless. I thought the characters were all pretty... I don't think anybody was really overacting. If any criticism I had were probably some of the women inside the bank with him. I thought some of them were a little silly, but it could be one of those things that is just a product of his time. But I had a hard time kind of placing the genre of this movie. Very many times I found the scenes really... really comical, and not in a bad way where I thought, like, oh, this is cheesy. But I was like, so is this supposed to be a comedy? Because everything's just going wrong for this guy. But even the dynamic between him and Moretti, this police officer that's supposed to be negotiating, even that relationship I found very comical, too, the way they shout at each other back and forth.
You know, this was based on a true story. This was based on the story of John Wojtowskis. I'm not going to pronounce this cat's name correctly, so I apologize about that. This was a true thing. This guy actually did go to this bank. Now, believe it was the character that John Cazale plays. He wasn't as old as the real character. The real character that John Cazale plays is apparently supposed to be like just 18.
Oh, wow.
And John Cazale is like in his 30s or so.
Yeah.
But this was a movie that came out right after The Godfather Part 2 because it features both those actors from that movie in very different but kind of similar roles. I mean, I'm sure you've seen The Godfather movies, am I correct?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. You know, but both those actors in the same movie together, but playing different but somewhat similar characters, you know, it kind of feels like this could be in a different world if you have these two characters instead of being part of the mob, they decide to rob banks. It's very much a comical but somewhat serious performance, like you were talking about. I don't know. Did you find that to be kind of like different or odd to see these two actors who are very much remembered for being in The Godfather, being in this movie?
Yeah. The thing is, I actually don't remember John Cazale that much from The Godfather movies. Honestly, I've only seen them twice each. I don't think I watched the third one twice. But just looking up John Cazale, actually, I'm very surprised. He was married to Meryl Streep in the late 70s until he died at the age of 42. But no, that's kind of what I saw with Al Pacino, actually. That one, I was like, yeah, he's kind of very similar to the character in Godfather. John Cazale had very little screen time, but I did enjoy his character. And I was trying to really I was really trying to kind of just figure his character out, really. you know, from the little things that he says, and just trying to find his motive in assisting Sonny through all this.
Sure, sure. So let's kind of break down a few scenes from this movie. But before we do that, we'll give a quick little plot description, which I kind of already did in the beginning of the show. But yes, anyways, Al Pacino plays Sonny, who in the middle of New York is robbing this bank. And it's hard for me to really tell you much of a plot description because that's basically it. He's robbing a bank. He wants the money, and we don't know exactly why he's robbing the bank. It is funny, though. He starts off with a three-man crew. Him, John Cazale, and I forget the other actor's name. But that guy gets scared right in the beginning of the robbery and has to leave. Just has to leave. I do like the moment when he wants to take the car. But then Sonny's like, well, then, no, you take the bus. We need the car to get home. There's that little comic interlude right there. But the cops do show up. One of the cops is played by Charles Durin. And, you know, they want him to come out or at least release a hostage. And there is a scene that has been played on many different shows, like top moments of movies. And they always feature the moment when Al Pacino is, he's outside the bank and he's talking to Charles Durin, and they want him to give up and release the hostages or give up himself.
Let Sal come out and take a look, all right? What hope you got, huh? Come on, quit while you're ahead. All you got is attempted robbery.
Armed robbery.
All right, armed then. Yeah. Nobody's been hurt. Release the hostages. Nobody's going to worry over kidnapping charges. The most you're going to get is 5 years. You get out in 1 year, huh?
Kiss me, yeah.
What?
Kiss me. When I'm being fucked, I like to get kissed a lot.
Come on.
You're a city cop, right? Robbing a bank's a federal offense. They got me on kidnapping, armed robbery. They're going to bury me, man. I don't want to talk to somebody who's trying to calm me. Get somebody in charge here.
I am in charge.
I don't want to talk to some flunky pig trying to calm me.
You don't have to be calling.
What's he doing?
And will you get back over there?
What are you over in there for?
Will you get the fuck back there? Huh? Get back
there.
What's
he doing? Look at him with him.
Get over there.
Go back there, man.
Get over there, will you?
He wants to kill me so bad he can taste it.
Oh, God, I was going to kill
him. Attica! Attica!
Attica!
Attica!
That is the moment when a lot of people start, in an odd way, supporting him. Because, like, during the course of the robbery, more and more people are showing up. You know, you got different types of police units showing up there, too. And I have to ask you, Peter, what did you think about the moments when the crowd started showing up? And also about the support that he gets.
Yeah, I think that Attica scene in particular, I thought it was great, actually. I had to look it up afterwards that it was about a prison riot, you know, that happened in the early 70s. But that moment, it was really interesting for this guy who really seemingly, you know, doesn't have a plan when he robs the bank. Everything just goes wrong. You mentioned the third guy kind of backs out before anything gets started. Like the Sal's character, you know, pulls out a gun in front of the manager, the bank manager, and then immediately the kid that joined them is wanting to leave in the exchange with the whole car. So you don't know what's going on. You don't find the motive until a little bit later on. And then with this Attica scene, it goes from this this thief with no plan. It shoots him into basically superstardom. You know, the media shows up. Everybody is in full support. And again, for those that, you know, when this movie came out, I think a lot of people knew what the deal with Attica was. I think kind of revisiting this movie now, looking at it, you know, a little over 40 years later, most people probably have forgotten or are just not educated on that prison riot. So for me, as a new watcher, I was just like, okay, well, how is this going to go now? Is he going to actually get everything that he wants? Because now the public's eye is on him, right? He's getting all this support just because of the mention of Attica. So it just added like another element to the movie at that point. And I was at the edge of my seat, really. I didn't know what was going on. You got this pizza guy delivering pizza, and even he's like, oh, I'm a fucking star, you know? And so it was just great. You know, I just kind of wanted to see where it ended or where it led to from that point.
Yeah, well, another thing, too, about the scene is that, well, this movie is taking place in the 70s. It's, like, right after the Vietnam War, and I think probably just, I think this is definitely during the Nixon administration, and a lot of people, they were not trusting the government or any type of government institutes. So when you have a bank robber kind of go against, you know, establishment there, that's what a lot of people at the time were responding to and in a way sort of celebrating. And also the notion of being noticed or being on TV is still a big thing. It's still a big thing now with, you know, our use of like social media and whatnot there. But when you actually have an event going on, people want to go down there and see the event in the hopes that, hey, maybe, you know, I'll get noticed on TV cameras or things like that. If I can be associated with, hey, look, I saw a bank robbery. I was there. I saw it live. It was intense. It was insane. There were cop cars everywhere. And I'm sure most people that were there in the crowd, they did not really care one way or another if there was a bank robbery, money getting stolen, or there were hostages. They were just excited by the whole spectacle of the whole thing.
Yeah, no, I agree. And it also kind of helped Sonny's character also when he throws away free money, you know, to kind of get the crowd on his side a little bit more. This movie, you know, it is mentioned at the opening that it is based on a true story. I am very curious to kind of hear or read into it a little bit more, because I thought for what was going on, you have some, you know, quote unquote hostages. Nobody like attempted to shoot Sonny for as open as he was, you know, in front of that bank. There were no accidental shots or accidental deaths. Everything went, for lack of a better word, kind of smooth. You know, I know there's many instances where he would catch a police officer, you know, pointing a gun and then they will lower it, but how, with that many law enforcement officials out there, how was there no accidental deaths is what I'm getting at, basically. It's just, this guy, for hours, he would come out exposed, unarmed, but still not get apprehended in any way. I know they try to sneak in through the back and all of that. So, as far as I can remember, there might have been, is it just the one gunshot in the back of the, when he was going to check the AC or something? Did he shoot more than once?
I thought it was only just once there. Yeah, I mean, that was kind of a mistake of the guards trying to, the police trying to come into the back way right there. Yeah, and I totally agree too. I mean, with that many cops around, you think that there would have been, you know, some sort of like mishap, like accidental shooting of a hostage or someone else there too. Yeah, very much so.
I mean, even maybe like somebody, like just a standby, you know, somebody, you know, there's a lot of people on the outside. There's a lot of police officers. Even the scuffle, you know, when they were trying to pick up money, because there was a lot of, you know, people on top of people, dog pile kind of deal. And even when you have the FBI involved, you got all these different entities there. And Moretti isn't controlling every single one of them, but he seems to have some sort of pull because he's kind of the guy, you know, in charge. But even when the FBI Sheldon, I think it is, when he shows up, how is he not telling any of his officers to take a shot or do anything else? But it's just, it's kind of mind-boggling just to see how smoothly it went for Sonny, despite not really having a plan or any contingencies for anything that goes wrong.
Yeah, No, very, very much so. Did you recognize any of the hostages in the bank right there?
Some of the women did look very familiar. I didn't pull up their names to see.
Well, one of them was Carol Kane.
Oh, right. Yes, I know that name.
You know, from Princess Bride.
Yes, the comedian. Yeah, yep. She was also in Gotham, played the Penguin's mom. Yeah, I did not recognize her in the movie, but I did see her name in the credits.
Okay. All right, very much so. And also we had, towards the end of the movie, a very young Lance Henriksen as the guy in the police car. Or guy in the big bus when, you know, they all start to escape. I thought he was actually, when I first saw the movie, I thought a young Lance Henriksen looks a lot like Dan Castellaneta from The Simpsons.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
When I first watched that scene, I'm like, wait, is that Dan Castellaneta from The Simpsons? That can't be right. Like, no, it's Lance Henriksen. I'm like, oh, shit.
You know,
I swear.
Yeah, even this other actor, Durning, what was his name? Charles Durning.
Charles Durning,
he,
yeah.
He kind of reminded me of, the accent. Not even there, but he kind of looked like a young Brian Dennehy, you know?
He does.
Yeah. So
yeah. I remember Charles Denning mainly from the Muppet movie. He played Doc Hopper. He was the bad guy trying to get after Kermit because he wanted Kermit to be the spokesmodel for his fraud, his fried fraud legs. He had from the Muppet movie. He was a bad guy in that. But yeah, anything else you want to say at all about the Attica scene?
Then that's pretty much it. It was pretty brief, and I thought it was actually a pretty powerful scene.
Very much so. Now, the next moment we're going to talk about is the section when we do get the reveal of why Sonny is dropping the bank. And we get the reveal when he asks for his wife to come see him, all right? And there is a moment when the cops find a woman and, you know, her kids, talking to them, and she's saying, oh, no, my husband's always been nice and everything like that. I would have no idea why he would like to do that. But who actually shows up to the bank is a man. And he is the character of Leon, played by Chris Sarandon, who most listeners will know mainly from the movie Fright Night. The original Fright Night in 85, he played the head vampire Jerry in that movie. But in this one, he plays a man named Leon who got married to Sonny and wanted to have a sex change operation. And that is why Sonny is robbing the bank, is so that he can afford money for the sex change operation. I do want to talk about the scene when Sonny does actually talk to Leon. What did you think about, you know, Leon, the fact that he was actually afraid of Sonny at first? That took a different kind of spin on it. What did you think of, you know, the character of Sonny then?
The funny thing with the whole introduction of Leon, I felt like it was like an unintentional misdirect, because when we get that reveal about Leon being Sonny's wife, it was like a 180 for me. I'm like, what? You know, at no point, and, you know, maybe it's just me, but I didn't even get any kind of hints that Sonny was gay or bisexual. You know, introducing us to his female wife briefly, there was a misdirect there. So the reveal worked for me, but I'm just like, was it earned though? Because I feel, from what we have seen so far, I feel Sonny's character would be the type to be a bit of a closet gay, you know. But once Leon is brought onto the screen, he felt, you know, like there's no shame in who I am, kind of thing. But I wish I could have gotten a little bit more of that from the character. And I'm not saying that this is what they were trying to do in the movie, but it almost felt like it might have been something written in a little bit later. I'm not sure. I mean, I know it is based on a true story, but how much of it is actually factual? You know, was there a character like Leon? I don't know. But just that whole interaction, I did really enjoy it, but I felt cheated in a way, just because I didn't get any of these clues, or you know what I mean? Like, as far as the writing goes, it just came out of left field. But I was still enjoying that interaction. I loved the phone call, and very surprised how scared Leon was of Sonny's Sonny character, because I didn't even find him to come off crazy or violent, really. You know, it's just one of those guys that kind of is very impulsive. I don't know. I guess we kind of saw some, but I mean, he wasn't manhandling anybody. He never got aggressive with anyone. I felt like if he did, it was to really put on a show because he's trying to rob a bank. With that introduction, it kind of made me think, like, okay, well, these guys served in the war. Is this, you know, some sort of PTSD? Were they all in a hospital together? Were they in prison together? So when they bring on Leon, it changes the kind of the narrative for me, and it actually made me start thinking about other things. And so I kind of forgot about the whole deal and the motive, as to why Sonny's robbing the bank. We find the motive, but now I'm starting to think about their backstory. So that's where I'm a little kind of muddled with the Leon's character.
Sonny in real life did have a wife with a few kids, but ended up falling in love with this other man, and they got married, and he wanted to pay for his sex change operation, and therefore that's why he robbed the bank. And he never actually had much of a criminal record. The Sonny character didn't have much of a criminal record, and he just impulsively wanted to just rob this bank just all of a sudden there, you know, without any really big plans or anything. He just had it in his head to rob the bank there. And I really never thought of it as being a much 180, because did he really need to mention he was straight or gay when he's robbing a bank? Is that an important element?
It's not important, but I think, you know, I might be a little spoiled with, the modern writing nowadays. You know, for example, let's just throw in Breaking Bad. You know, there's an explanation for everything. Everything is very tightly written. For this one, it's not that it wasn't tightly written. I didn't think that. So maybe 180 was a little much. You know, perhaps a, I don't know, a it's a reveal, right? So I think that maybe it didn't need to be a reveal. Perhaps that, I don't know, maybe showing us his actual wife and then bringing Leon later was just a little confusing for me.
Yeah.
And if they never showed his actual wife and the kids, I think that could have been a little bit nicer. You know, maybe they focus on the character of, let's say, quote unquote, the wife, right? And then it's revealed to be an actual man. So rather than us showing the woman as well and kind of confusing people, you know, I think the reveal maybe could have been handled a little bit better is what I'm getting at.
I get that. So you think that showing, you know, the wife and the kids was like the wrong direction to go. If they would have just mentioned the wife and showed Chris Randon instead of trying to confuse audiences and be like, oh, well, he has, you know, a wife and, you know, a woman there with two other kids or whatnot, and then showing the Chris Randon character, that was a wrong misdirection to use.
Yeah, exactly, actually. You know, if we got to hear how much he loves his wife and all of that, and, you know, we start to sympathize because we understand love, right? And then Leon shows up, might like, oh, wow, I didn't expect that. You know, that would be the reveal, and I felt that would have been a lot more earned. because, again, he's talking about his wife, and then they show us a wife and a couple of kids, and his wife is really funny. That the female wife, she's hilarious. But then Leon shows up. Yeah. I'm like, wait a minute. Wait, well, where did this come from? You know, and I'm sure that's the way it played out in real life. But for me, watching this story, I could have done without the female wife. Like, I didn't need her. She's a bit of a mulligan. And if we can, you know, kind of focus on Sonny's love for his quote-unquote wife and sympathize with the character a little bit more, and then have the reveal as Leon being that wife, I'm like, oh, okay. You know, it's kind of like, let me see. Did you ever see the movie Rockstar with Mark Wahlberg?
I have not.
Well, there was a some kind of trivia that was dropped about a musician. Yeah, I might be mixing up my movies now, but there's a male musician who they had this song that was titled after a woman. And then there were some lines like, oh, did you think such and such was a woman? So implying that the song was actually written about a man with a female name. So it's kind of like that, right? So you're just like, oh, his wife. And then Leon shows up. You're like, oh, wow, okay. You know, that's, well, the turn of events, right? I think the reveal would have been a little bit more stronger that way.
I fully agree with that. Did you like Chris Randon's performance in that movie?
Oh, he was great. I just looked it up real quick here. He was nominated for Best Supporting Actor. And yeah, I thought he was amazing. I obviously know him in other things like Princess Bride, the voice of Jack Skellington from The Nightmare Before Christmas. Oh.
I can't believe I didn't mention Princess Bride earlier. Yeah. Prince Humperdinck. Most people know him for Prince Humperdinck than they do Fright Night. Right. Idiot Vern.
Well, and what about Child's Play, the first Child's Play?
Yes, of course, but more. I'm sorry, listeners. You probably know Chris Randon more as Prince Humperdinck and the Princess Bride than you would Fright Night. All right, but I've seen Fright Night more than I saw Princess Bride, so I just assume that everyone watches the same amount of movies that I do. All right, so I apologize about that immensely. There, I do want to talk really briefly, or mainly about the scene when Sonny actually does talk to Leon.
Are they on the phone now?
Yeah.
That's great, Leon. You know, that's really terrific. You talk to me with them on the phone. That's really smart.
Well, I don't have a choice.
What do you mean you didn't have a choice?
Well, what am I supposed to do? I mean, they're standing all around me. There's 7,000 fucking cops all around me.
Who's on the phone now?
Look, don't lay it on me.
I'm not laying it on you, but you knew what was going on, right? What are you talking about laying it on you? You knew what was happening, right?
Yeah. Well, I didn't have
who's
a
on
choice.
The, I wanna, I... Who's on the phone now? Moretti. Moretti, is that you on the phone?
Hello?
Will somebody talk to me? Somebody gonna talk to me or what? They on the phone now?
They won't talk to you.
All right, he didn't do it, okay? He had nothing to do with it.
All right? Now will you get the fuck off the phone?
Are they off the phone?
So this is kind of the big heart-wrenching moment of the movie when, you know, he's trying to confess why he's doing this right there. And you can tell it's a very tender phone call. It's almost a phone call where Sonny is admitting that, hey, look, I'm not going to live through this, all right? I'm not going to survive this at all, you know, and I really, you know, love and care for you. I could also put in the scene there. No, I'm going to stick with this one here. But the whole moment when he's talking to Sonny, really just trying to tell him, like, look briefly here about he's not going to be able to survive this at all. Leon is afraid, thinking that he's going to be an accessory to the fact. And he's telling him, no, you won't be an accessory to the fact. Let all the cops know that you won't be there. You do get a genuine side, but also at the same time, when he hears stuff from Leon's perspective, you know that Sonny does have a capacity to be angry, to be violent. And I think that this phone call, in a way, is sort of like Sonny's apologies to Leon to say, you know, look, I apologize. And I think it's really kind of a nice little moments. It's a moment of where the character has a little, what's the word I'm looking for right now? Trying to project forgiveness for their actions. I don't know. Let's hear what you thought about this.
You used the perfect word for this scene. You said tender. I thought it was a very, a great dialogue between two characters whom at this moment I am believing, that have been lovers. They give us a lot of exposition, a little bit of backstory in this as well, being married and all that, kind of how it went down. I guess the inclusion of this scene and also the previous scene when he talks to Leon talks to Moretti, but it's very playful between one another. It's something that you would see in friends and lovers really. But I like their kind of playfulness, kind of towards the end when there's a realization, an acceptance of their kind of reality. I guess because it starts off very. Not adversarial, but there's some reservations from Leon's character, was speaking to Sonny. And once they kind of hash things out and Sonny in his own ways kind of apologize to Leon and all of this and for putting him through all this, I like their interaction then kind of towards the end. Just very playful and it was very sweet. And I was smiling, and I'm just, I wish I could have gotten more of Leon, really. But
yeah,
it was good.
I agree with that too, because it does seem to come a little bit too late. But I do like the whole thing when Leon first comes to the bank. You think, oh, he's gonna talk to Sonny out. He's gonna say, look, why are you doing this? I love you. Get out of this. But no, Leon is like legitimately scared of Sonny. I mean, so scared that he can't even talk on the phone with him. I mean, there's that moment where he just freaks out. It's like, no, please don't. All right. I know he's going to hurt me. And the cop's like, well, he's only on the phone. And like the fact that he is legitimately scared, maybe kind of question Sonny a little bit. I'm like, well, is he abusive? Is this like an abuse thing that he has going on with Leon there? But during the course of, their phone call, it turns out that Leon may have just overreacted to certain things there. Like, Sonny is a very outspoken character, and he becomes very loud and whatnot. And I know that sometimes he does scare Leon with his the way he outbursts certain things. But he never came across as being overly super violent, and I think you kind of get that aspect when they're both on the phone there.
I agree with all of that. When Leon was first introduced, until we realized that Sonny does know who Leon was, I was still waiting for something to be like Leon, he is maybe a mentally ill person who just wanted some fame. That's what I thought was going to happen. And then until Leon's like, hey, something about his birthday, and then Leon faints. I'm like, oh, okay, well, this is interesting. So they know each other, and so is this the wife? Because even when the cops say, like, well, this is who, answered the door, and even Leon says that, they say that Leon identified him as Sonny's wife, and they brought him down. I was just still kind of like, wait, what is this? So that was my reaction to that scene.
Yeah, no, and I could totally understand too why you thought it was another like mental patient, because there are a bunch of people outside, waiting around, want to become famous. I wouldn't be surprised if someone did wander out and say, hey, look, I'm the wife. And
right. It
could have easily been a mental patient, which would have been, another twist. And it also would have gone with the whole notion of everyone wants to become famous type of thing that was going on in the course of this. I thought everything was real and genuine. And I never thought the reveal of, like, another man was really it wasn't that much of a stretch, actually. Yeah. And I a lot of people want to put labels on movies too, thinking that, you know, this is like a social justice movie. It's a movie about a gay character, and he's the forefront there. He's the main character who's gay. And I love the fact that in the 70s, they actually did feature a main character who was gay, but they never actually said, hey, we are on the forefront here. We're putting a gay male character on the screen as a lead character. It wasn't promoted as being a gay movie, which it could be, but I feel like if this movie was released today, it would have been just shown as just being that. And I like the fact that, too, that this movie never makes really too much mention of it, though.
Yeah.
Which I think is very kind of commendable for Sidney Lumet, as well as the other filmmakers of this one, too. Because it easily could have been that way. And I'm just kind of glad it didn't. I'm glad they presented the Sunny character as just being, just appearing like everyday normal people, because there are a lot of gays and lesbians that are just everyday normal people. They don't have to be the very cliche presentations that you have seen in other movies right there. And I have to respect the filmmakers of that. I think that's really kind of a commendable thing. And, you know, I watched this movie because I just wanted to see a movie about a bank robbery. And when it was revealed that the main character was gay, I'm like, oh, okay, all right. You know, but they didn't really make it into a big thing. It was just part of the plot. I mean, yes, you heard some, you know, people saying stuff in the background about him, but it never turned into a plot element. Him being gay was never like a major plot element. It's still focused on, you know, the robbery and trying to get the hostages released there. So I have to respect it for that, and I think it's really kind of cool. But do you agree? Do you think that if this movie was released today, it would focus more on that aspect of it?
I still don't think so. I think it could have been just like this one. You know, like you said, it wasn't, from the jump, right? We kind of been talking about it. We didn't know Sonny was gay, and we found out afterwards. And clearly that's not the direction that the filmmakers wanted to go. They weren't going to be like, all right, well, he's gay. Let's focus on that. And I wasn't, you know, earlier when I was talking about, you know, this reveal, I wasn't asking like, oh, you know, Sonny needs to be more gay, so I would know. You know, hopefully nobody thought that, but
no, I got what you meant by that. You thought that the way that they handled it was a little bit off by showing the wife first and everything, and
I do love how he's just a regular person, you know. Mm-hmm. It could have been a woman. It does not matter what his sexual preference is. It's really his love for Leon. That's, you know, that's the story here, right? That's why he's robbing the bank. And that's what it's about. And that's the focus. And I thought they did it well.
And maybe I'm just thinking about how audiences would perceive the movie in the 70s compared to now by having a gay main character. I kind of figured a lot of people nowadays with social media, they would tend to spoil the movie by saying that he's a gay character who wants to pay for his wife's sex change. Nowadays in social media and people spoiling things, it would be much more easier to spoil this movie than it was in the 70s. And I think you still can enjoy the movie even if it's spoiled. But I don't know, maybe I'm thinking too much of this. Do you think it can still be spoiled or not? Or
I think it could be, you know, and I was actually kind of just thinking about it a little bit more. If this movie had come out now, I think it would have, well, it's still hard to say, you know, it really depends on the filmmakers, but they could totally, you know, go a route where he's like obviously gay, mannerisms and all in the very beginning. It's one of those things. I would just have to see it, I guess. When there's a remake that comes out, people are often like, oh gosh, why a remake? I don't want to watch it. The reason I do that particular podcast is because I am interested to see the route that they're going to take. You know, what unique vision can they give us on a story that has already been told? And, well, sometimes maybe it's a little too bold. Hey, whatever, they tried. I'll still watch it.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's way too close to the original material. And people are like, well, what's why bother then if you're not going to do anything different? You can't have your cake and eat it too, you know? So that's why I am always open to remakes. But I think that maybe because the original movie came out in 75, maybe they were kind of towing the line of homosexuality, you know, and maybe that's why it was so overt, I guess. And I don't know. Again, it being not the like the big story or the big plot point of Sonny's character, I thought it was, well, it could have been accidental, it could have been purposeful, but I think that's the way it should be. So I don't know if I answered your question. I think I kind of just spoke.
No, you know that's fine there too. You mentioned a great thing too about how this movie be remade, and would it focus on those things or not? It kind of depends on the filmmaker. If this were to be remade, since you do host a podcast about remaking movies, who would you see as the main role, the Al Pacino character?
You know what? On that show, we recycle actors and actresses so often. And it's hard for me to come up with someone different, but for, two characters that I like to reuse over and over is Michael Shannon, or maybe like a Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Ooh.
Because I think, well, Joseph Gordon-Levitt is actually the Michael Shannon is a handsome guy too. They're all handsome, but I think as far as different ranges, you know, like how Al Pacino played Sonny, I think Michael Shannon would be great. I think Joseph Gordon-Levitt, you know, maybe Sean Penn's way too old now, but I think Sean Penn might have came to mind because of the movie Milk, really. But
okay,
you know, how about that? How about Michael Shannon as Sonny and Joseph Gordon-Levitt as Sal?
I kind of like that actually,
but then Joseph Gordon-Levitt might be too big to play Sal. You know, because Sal is very much a background character, really.
See, for the character of Sonny, this would be weird odd casting for me, but I'll put Jason Schwartzman as the character Sonny. And as Sal, we're going to go Paul Giamatti.
Okay, I like that.
I'm going to go a different thing right there. And for the character of Leon, well, I would say for the character of Leon, I'm going to put in Paul Rudd.
Okay, I like that.
I just, something way out there, because I don't know, Paul Giamatti's got kind of the loud voice right there. I just feel like he would be kind of a good Sal, like a very neurotic type of Sal. And I can see Jason Schwartzman being a bumbling bank robber who also gets become loud and violent at times right there. I can kind of buy into that.
Yeah, I would watch that too.
Okay, good. All right. well, anything else you want to say about Dog Day Afternoon or these scenes?
Not really. You know, the funny thing is, like, watching this movie, I don't know if this inspired other ones, but, you know, you kind of mentioned that this was pit up against, like, Inside Man, which I kind of saw in this movie as well. Even John Q with Denzel Washington was a little bit kind of like this, except for that takes place at a hospital. So I kind of like these genres where, you know, the location is just one location. You know, you get some of the stores that kind of surrounds this bank, but, you know, I would say about 75-80% of it is either inside or outside the bank. So I kind of like that, you know, when it's self-contained. You know, movies like Phone Booth, I like that too. Cellular, which is the kind of a spin on the movie Phone Booth, except for Chris Evans, I think, is in that movie. He has to stay on his cell phone the entire time and not get off. So I kind of like these type of movies. So for anyone, I don't know why you'd be listening to this if you haven't seen the movie yet, but do yourself a favor and check it out, because I think for Chris Sarandon's portrayal as Leon Alone, I thought he was really good. He just kind of surprised me for the little bit of screen time that he actually got. Sal, you know, kind of a mysterious, just because he doesn't have a whole lot of dialogue. So if there was some sort of remake, I would like them to maybe not flesh Sal out, but give him more to do. You know,
sure.
That's what I would like. But, you know, I think when you hire a young Al Pacino, you're going to give him all the screen time. So, you know, maybe it could be something where it's about two bank robbers, but your main guy focus on his love story with his, again, quote-unquote, wife. You know, I think that would really kind of build up that reveal a little bit more.
Kai, I totally agree with that. Totally agree with that, yes. Anyways, I think that's going to like wrap up this particular episode of the Cinema Recall Podcast. Again, big thank you to you, Peter, for appearing on the show right there. You basically brought in a lot of great views and opinions about Dog Day Afternoon. Thank you very much, sir. Can you just tell the listeners where they can find you online and all that?
Yeah, well, first and foremost, thank you again for giving me the opportunity to come on to your show. So I do appreciate the invite. But for me, you know, if listeners want to get a hold of me, you can really find all my shows on any podcasting apps of your choice. I think if the listeners found your show, they can find my show easily, right? Just type in the title. Mm-hmm. But if you want to interact with me on social media, I am most active on my main account at Podstalgic.
All right. Well, check that out, folks. As for the Cinema Recall Podcast, our next poll will be posted on thatmomentin.com very shortly. And I'm going to do one all about re-releases, because recently Close Encounters of the Third Kind got re-released in theaters. And so I want to know, what is a movie you would like to see re-released on the big screen? I will put in there five choices. I'm going to leave one blank. I don't know exactly what those choices are, but if you just go to the site, thatmomentin.com, there will be a poll put up there most likely after this episode posts, just because there are so many classic movies to put in theaters again. I can't think of one. Peter, do you have a movie that you would love to see on the big screen again?
You know what? I've been very lucky enough to watch some of my all-time favorites be released, but most recently, what was re-released in 3D was Terminator 2.
Oh, right. Yes. I missed seeing that, though. I really wanted to kind of see that, though, but I just missed out on seeing it.
I did, too. Unfortunately, none of the theaters nearby me was playing it. But on the note of James Cameron, you know, back in 2012, Titanic re-released in 3D as well, and I went to go watch that, and that was amazing. It was better than, you know, my first experience watching it in 97. He just invested a lot of money into making that look beautiful. So if James Cameron re-releases something in 3D, aside from Avatar, because I guess that kind of started it, but yeah, check it out. So I imagine that Terminator 2 was just as beautiful as Titanic in 3D. But Back to the Future, I've seen in theaters like six times at this point. I've even seen it live where there was an orchestra playing along with it. But off the top, if there was a movie that I can go see re-released, would probably be like Godfather 2 or something.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I think, you know, since you mentioned it earlier, I think I would love to see that in the theater along with the surround sound, the music, the score, all of that good stuff.
Yes. Speaking about James Cameron, I really hope he puts True Lies 3D.
That'd be awesome.
I want to see that movie again in the theaters. In fact, it doesn't have to be 3D. Just put that movie back in theaters because It's an amazing movie. All right, it doesn't have to be 3D. But yeah, we want to know. I'll put in there a poll of some type. But movies that would be best re-released in theaters, then you pick your vote. We'll talk about a scene from that movie. Anyways, you can always follow everything that happens here at the Cinema Recall Podcast. We are featured on Podomatic, on iTunes, on Stitcher Radio, Player FM. Please follow us on Twitter. We are at That Moment In. Look us up on Facebook at That Moment In. I myself, The Vern, you can find me on Twitter. I'm at Video Vanguard. That is basically it for right now for the Cinema Recall Podcast. Again, big thank you again to my guest, Peter, for being on the show and talking to us about his opinions. He gave us a lot of factual information. I do strongly urge you all to check out his shows. They are a lot of fun. He brings in a lot of great guests, and they get to do some really deep conversations. about movies. But I'm going to leave y'all right now, folks. Thank you again for listening, and have a great night, or day, or afternoon, or whenever you listen to this. Take care.